Hi, you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, broadcasting to you on the 19th of December 2012. And today, ladies and gentlemen, I'm broadcasting from the nation's capital in Canberra. And I'm actually broadcasting in the open air. You'll hear the sounds of crickets and birds, and I hope we don't get interrupted. But I'm actually staying with my mother, Shirley Fenton, who I'm hoping to get on the show for a very brief chat in the second hour. And I do hope you enjoy the show. We've got a lot of important news to bring to you. And in the first hour, I have a very, very illustrious guest who's been on Truth News quite a number of times, Rochelle McCready, who is joining us to share her research into the Connecticut school shootings, which are currently dominating the news in Australia. And we've got the endless sort of drumbeat of gun reform and the sort of guarantee that President Obama is going to change the laws in the wake of these attacks, that this is a tipping point in the whole history of gun violence in the United States. And it's been on the news day after day. I mean, for those who are listening in the US, it might be surprising to note that this story has actually dominated our media for about 4 days straight. And of course, just for our listeners in the US, it might be interesting to note as well that our gun laws were changed in the wake of a massacre that took place in 1996, the Port Arthur massacre in Tasmania, in which 35 people were gunned down allegedly by the mentally deficient 65 IQ Martin Bryant. And there have been many questions and many conspiracies floating around for years about whether that was in fact made to order, because the government wanted to bring the guns back and keep the population disarmed. So this is it's an important subject for Australia. It's an important subject for any country where the questions about rights versus government versus regulation are prominent. So on that note, I'd just like to welcome Rochelle to Truth News. Rochelle, how's it going?
Very well, thank you, Harold. Thank you very much for having me on.
It's a great pleasure as always, Rochelle. Now, can you tell me what you have uncovered? You've been doing a lot of work,
yes,
and we've been going through some of the details you've uncovered. Just run us through what you know and what the most important salient points you think are to bring to this subject.
Well, the salient points are that the story about the Connecticut shooter is changing all the time. And my analysis is based on the initial police reports. I got those, listened to them. And the story is being changed to people have initially being shot with handguns to people being shot with assault rifles. And when you actually analyse the whole scenario, you'll see that it's flawed, that there are all kinds of logical problems with it and what have you. The real culprit is something that I will mention later, but I would like to say at the onset, Harold, because people have occasionally challenged me over this, they said, well, what do you know about statistics and science and all that kind of thing? You're a lawyer. Well, I did do a science degree before I studied law. I did a major in pure maths, but I did statistics and applied maths as well. So I can tell you about my analysis of things, if you like.
Yes, I should actually have introduced you correctly with all of your qualifications. I mean, you're a practicing lawyer. You've also got a science degree. How many degrees actually do you have?
Three.
You've got 3 degrees. Yep. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're not talking here to someone who's just, backyard couch sitting sort of speculator. I mean, we're talking to someone here who understands the rigors of academic research. So just that caveat important. Rochelle, please continue.
Good, thanks very much. Now, every time, Harold, we hear about a mass shooting, we're told that the culprit is the availability of guns. So the number of gun massacres you have, the number of fatalities you have, is a function of the availability of guns. Now, this is complete rubbish, because there are more guns in Switzerland than any other country in the world, yet Switzerland has the lowest crime rate of any country. Now, the Swiss are obsessed with cuckoo clocks, cheese, dirty money and triangular chocolate. They're not like the Americans. But also, there are more guns in Canada than there are in America, yet Canada has a fraction of the US homicide rate. And something that's very important is that a statistically significant number of gun homicides committed in Canada were committed by Americans who crossed the border. So it's not a function of the availability of guns. Now, the US Constitution, it's the Second Amendment, it's the Bill of Rights, allows people to keep and bear arms against the government. Now, you need to ask, is this a sensible thing to do? Is this just paranoia? Well, yes, it is a very sensible thing to do. Governments were the leading cause of unnatural deaths during the 20th century. They claimed in excess of 262 million lives, and none of those lives were combatant. So this was genocide, it was agricultural policies that caused fatality, it was capital punishment, it was a number of things.
Right.
We had some really sort of stellar examples of antisocial personalities during the 20th century. Now, my position is that I don't advocate everybody go around armed to the teeth. I don't own a gun. I've never been hunting. I abhor hunting. I don't go fishing. I'm a vegetarian, but I have fired guns. I've done target practice just at bottles and empty tinnies and ice cream containers on a fence. But I wouldn't kill an animal, but I have fired a 22. So that's just my position. Now, with this Connecticut shooting, Harold, the government is changing its story all the time. It's changing it to suit the agenda of gun control. Now, instead of just letting the facts speak for themselves, this is a real PR stunt, and it's beginning to resemble a CIA disinformation campaign. The real culprit isn't being targeted. So how do you know what's true? How do you know it isn't true? You go to the initial police reports.
Yeah.
When there are two alternative hypotheses available to explain the same phenomenon, the one which is to be preferred is that which makes the fewer presumptions. That's Occam's razor, also known as the law of parsimony. Now, according to the initial police report, the alleged shooter, Adam Lanza, was found dead with two handguns beside him. One was a Glock with a 17-round magazine and the other was a Sig Sauer with a 15-round magazine. Now, the average time for police to, well, the maximum time for police to respond is supposed to be no more than 3 minutes, but there was a drill going on there, and the police claim they responded in under a minute. Now, in under a minute, they found Adam Lanza dead. He was alleged to have fired off 100 rounds from two handguns. Now, we've got more unknowns than equations, but if we sort of take an average between the two handguns, that would have necessitated a minimum of 7 magazine changes in the space of less than a minute. So you can see it's beginning to look dodgy. But I've also been on Conspiracy Cafe and I've been listening to George Freund, who is a retired Canadian police officer who has quite extensive experience in handling guns and knows a good deal about them. And the story was then changed. You see, what happened initially was that the assault rifle that was allegedly used to kill all the victims was found by the police in the boot of Adam Lanza's car. But later the story got changed.
Well, that's odd. How could he was killed on the scene, wasn't he? How could his gun? Okay.
He was supposed to have aced himself. But
okay.
Anyway, what happened is the later reports claim that all the victims were shot with a semi-automatic, which was found in the boot of the car later. And according to these reports, what they allege was that Adam Lanza entered the building with a shotgun, an assault rifle, two handguns, and a heap of ammunition.
Right.
Now, George Freund pointed out that this sort of hardware is extremely heavy, bulky and unwieldy, and this guy's a skinny weed. Now, how did he get through doors carrying this stuff? How did he manage to change magazines? And Freund said the thing that alerted him to the fact that something wrong was because the glass was initially supposed to have been kicked in or from the front door. Now, Freund pointed out that in schools and throughout America, in Canada, and I certainly remember this with the public school I attended and also the Church of England Grammar that I attended, is that there's this safety glass used in schools that has wire mesh embedded in it. And Freund said you can't kick it in.
Yeah.
And he said, if you fire a bullet through it, the bullet will simply go through it, but the wire mesh will stay in place and so will most of the glass. So he said that of itself should have been enough to have alerted people to the fact that there was something dodgy. Now, how the hell did Lanza shoot all these people, discharging over 100 rounds in the process, then go back to the car, shove the shotgun and the assault rifle in the boot, then re-enter the building and top himself with two handguns in his possession and apparently ammunition clips, we don't know what happened to them, in about 3 minutes max, probably under a minute, because the shooting was supposed to have been over and done within a minute.
Right.
So this is really very, very dodgy just on the face of it. We don't even know if Lanza was a real shooter or he's just a drugged up CIA patsy. And that, you know, there were reports of two guys fleeing the scene. They were arrested and taken into custody. They may well have been the WAC team and they may have killed him, but we don't know. But the real culprit in this, what is the real culprit? How is America so different to other countries? Well, one in five Americans, it's been reported on Fox News, are now on psychotropic drugs. One in five.
That is an incredible statistic.
If you look at Europe, you'll find that Americans are three times more likely to be prescribed psychotropic drugs than Europeans. The proportion of Americans on antidepressants is 11% of the population. By contrast, only one in 20 Australians is on antidepressants. But the problem is, these drugs cause homicidality and suicidality, aggression and a lack of rationality. Now, I'm basing my research on Dr. Peter Breggin, who is now a retired psychiatrist, but on a testimony he gave before a congressional committee on antidepressants and suicides. Now, following a complaint by the German equivalent of the FDA that they had found an increased suicide rate in people taking Prozac, they went to the FDA in America, and Eli Lilly was asked to provide data on the increase in suicidality. And what they've been doing is classifying attempted, either real suicides or attempted suicides, as simply no drug effect. So you can see how misleading their research was. Now, following this research that the Eli Lilly were forced to carry out by the FDA, the FDA required antidepressant manufacturers to review their clinical trials, and the FDA concluded that the newer antidepressants, these are selected serotonin reuptake inhibitors, doubled the rate of suicidal thoughts and behaviour in children, youth and young adults up to the age of 24. Now, Zoloft carries a black box warning. This is one of those selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Antidepressants increase the risk of suicidality compared to placebos in children, adolescents and young people. The label concedes a lot of adverse effects occur, and they occur in non-psychiatric patients. Now, the black box warning is followed by this very ominous warning, clinical worsening and suicide.
Okay, we're just going to break. Thanks, Rochelle. That's a really amazing summary. You've really penetrated deep into this subject. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and we're going through Rochelle's research into the Connecticut Newtown school shootings, and very, very riveting stuff. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Like the river I
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Hereward Fenton. It's great to be with you today. You can find our website on the internet, of course, truthnews.com.au, and you can also find our archives on Logos Radio Network if you put that into Google. Now, Rochelle, you were just in mid-flight there with your expose of the Connecticut school shootings. Can you just continue where you left off? I don't want to obstruct you in your flow.
Thank you, Hereward. Well, the black box warning is followed by a very ominous warning entitled Clinical Worsening and Suicide. And it lists symptoms that can appear in children and young adults: irritability, impulsivity, violence, hostility, aggression, mania, and hypomania. There's also a condition called akathisia. And DSM-4, the Bible of Psychiatric Diagnosis, points out that akathisia leads to suicide. Mania and hypomania are out-of-control states, and these can lead to violence and suicide. Now, the withdrawal phase from these drugs is also extremely dangerous. The severe adverse reactions can occur during the withdrawal phase. Now, nobody can say, this is what Bregan has pointed out, that there's no causality demonstrated between this violence and suicide and these drugs, because the gold standard for causality is the clinical trial. And the clinical trial shows a doubling of the rate of suicidality in people taking these drugs. So what the hell is the use of them? Now, there is another study, or there are other studies that show there was a meta-analysis done on the efficacy of antidepressants, and they showed that they were no more effective than placebos. They didn't even get outside the range of the placebo effect. So there's no point in giving these drugs to people. They double the suicide, the probability that someone commits suicide, and they're also not effective. So why are they going? Why are they still an ongoing thing? Anyway, now let's have a look at the news reports about Adam Lanza. He was a product of the mental health system and had been taking medication, quote unquote, since the age of 10. He was reportedly seeing a psychiatrist at least from the age of 15. Lanza's mother reportedly told friends that he was getting worse and that she was having trouble reaching him. The questions that need to be answered is, when did Lanza receive his first mental health treatment? What diagnosis did he receive? And what drugs has he been prescribed over his short life? This is from the CCHR website. The larger question is the why these drugs are continuing to be prescribed, but I will cite some very interesting statistics. Now, between the years 1998 to 2012, 14 school shootings occurred, taking the lives of 58 people and wounding 109. All 14 of the shooters were taking or withdrawing from psychiatric drugs, and 7 of them had been under the care, quote unquote, of a psychiatrist or a psychologist. So here we have this interesting statistic. There's a very strong correlation.
Sure.
Now, the drugs that have been implicated in these, and the majority of these shootings, the drugs that have been prescribed, the psychiatric mind-altering drugs, had not been approved by the FDA for treatment of children or people under the age of 18, yet antidepressants are the top of the list of drugs indicted in these shootings, and they include Prozac, Trazodone, Effexor, Celexor, and Luvox. Now, another interesting statistic is that 8% of patients prescribed Paxil develop mania after taking the drug. And something that's very pertinent to what I'm doing at the moment is that people on antidepressants are often diagnosed after they've taken the antidepressants as suffering from bipolar disorder. So it's a drug-induced condition. Iatrogenic is the term for it, and they're being prescribed psychiatric drugs and getting a whole new psychiatric diagnosis for something that's essentially a side effect. Now, one thing we do know about depression is Peter Bregan has said that depression is not correlated with violence. And people who are depressed becoming violent has only happened since the advent of these new selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. And this is when we've had the murders, sometimes mass murders, murder-suicides. Now, just from this perspective, the rate of suicide has increased in the United States by 2,400%. It is now the leading cause of death in the United States, and it's gone past car accidents as being the cause of death. Now, let's have a look at the probability of dying in a mass shooting. We're being told it's a massive risk and you can't go outside and you're likely to get gunned down. In fact, the Greens' Christine Milne has called for a ban on semi-automatic weapons in Australia on the basis of a mass shooting in America. So,
really? She's called for an increased restriction in our ban here, yeah, which is already quite severe.
In Australia, you know, on the basis of something that's happened in America. Now, how statistically likely are you to die in a mass shooting? Is it, in fact, one of the leading causes of death? Well, the answer is no, it is clearly not. You're more likely to die from a deer, accident-causing deer kill about 200 Americans per annum. Nobody's advocating banning deer. And car accidents still kill more people. Now, it's very difficult, as Alex Jones pointed out, to get the statistics on this, but there are about 88 mass shootings per annum. But it's a misleading figure because about 44 of those, half of them, are actually gang shootouts. Right.
Can I just ask, Grisha, what is the definition of a mass shooting? Is that like more than one person?
Yeah, I think it's more than two victims. Maybe
so it's more than two, is it?
In one episode, like spree killings, they're often referred to as spree killings. People occasionally confuse them between serial killers. So I think a serial killer is somebody who goes out and goes bang, 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 like Martin Bryant, what Martin Bryant was alleged to have done. But in fact, there's a cooling off period with serial killers, whereas spree killers tend to take all their victims usually in one hit. But the real statistic is there are about 44 of those mass shootings a year. And so the probability of being killed in one of those mass shootings is extremely low, and it's certainly not worth trashing the US Constitution and the Bill of Rights because you're going to be creating more problems than what you solve. Yep. That's my research, Harold.
That is an amazing compendium of work. Now, Rochelle, I'd just like to run past you some thoughts I had. I put this up on Facebook. Now, there's a lot of different sides to the gun controversy, and I don't fall into any one group easily. Like I don't just sort of go with the crowd. I don't follow what one group of people say. I make my own mind up based on all the evidence and my own thoughts and my own perceptions about what is important. Now, I just made some notes here, and I posted them up on Facebook to clarify my position on the gun ownership question. Point number one, do I think high-powered guns should be freely available like candy in a candy store? No. Two, do I think it is good that the US is swimming in military-grade weaponry? No. Three, do I think the sale of military-grade weapons should be carefully regulated and restricted? Yes. Four, do I think automatic weapons should be completely banned? No. Five, do I think people have the intrinsic right to own such weapons? Yes. Six, do I think that gun ownership is a heavy responsibility and that all gun owners should be rigorously trained in handling them? Yes. Seven, do I think the latest shootings in the US are a false flag being used to justify disarming American citizens? Maybe. Eight, do I think that Barack Obama is a massive hypocrite? Duh. And I've made the note here, I wonder how many kids were killed over the last month in drone strikes at his command. And nine, do I think that there is something very, very fishy about the way this massacre has been played out in the media? Ooh, yeah. And we're just going to break. Rochelle, I'd like you to have your thoughts on those comments of mine when we come back right after this break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away. Really important show.
before you reach all your selfish goals. Punchline, laughter, punchline, leaving us all.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to be with you today. Well, we've been going through Rochelle's research on the Sandy Hook school massacre and her understanding of all the discrepancies and anomalies in the official story, and looking at the connection between the use of SSRI drugs and crime, violent crime, homicide, suicide. Very important stuff. Now, Rochelle, I read through there some of my observations and comments. Maybe hard for you to remember everything I said, but what do you think of the general gist of what I said there at the end of the last segment?
Well, I think I agree with you in most of them, Harold, but some things are counterintuitive. Like where most of, when there has been crime, when there have been crimes committed in the US and firearms have been involved, in over 80% of those cases, the firearms were used for self-defense or to save other people, so in crime prevention. So also, you see, it's less than 20% when these firearms were used in the commission of crimes. But the other thing is that the states in America that have the most stringent gun laws, or the ones that have banned the use of guns altogether, have the highest homicide rates and the highest crime rates. So here's another counterintuitive thing. You think, well, you get rid of guns, you get rid of crimes, but unfortunately, it's true that the criminals can always get guns. And if you've been looking at the way some of the police in the United States have been behaving, I think I'd be wanting to keep...
But can I just ask, sorry to interject, but can I just ask, you know, your opinion? I mean, should we be able to just go down to the shop and buy a semi-automatic rifle and, like, a litre of milk at the same time? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, let's just clarify the extremes of this. I mean, should you just be able to go down to the shop and buy a Kalashnikov and a litre of milk and a dozen eggs? You know, I mean,
no.
Do we want to get to that level of easy availability of weapons? I don't think we do.
No, we don't want people with a psychiatric history getting guns either, but you see...
Or kids.
Adam Lanza had a psychiatric history. He couldn't buy guns. He tried to buy guns, but his mother had guns. Now, we don't know who topped his mother.
Yeah.
It might have been a whack team. But anyway, the thing is, of course, if you outlaw guns, I mean, people can use knives. Like, there was an attack in a school in China and a guy used knives to attack children. So, I mean, what are we going to do next? Ban knives. You know, more people are killed by cars. We're going to kill cars. I mean, ban them altogether. No, we can't have cars because you might be killed by a car.
Well, what about very sharp carving knives? I mean, you know, kitchen implements are very, very dangerous if used with malicious intent.
Yeah, well, we need them in the household, don't we?
And a pair of scissors. I mean, think of how many horror movies have involved a pair of scissors.
Oh, yes, we'll have to ban scissors as well. I mean, people could be strangled with pantyhose, so we better ban those things as well.
Well, they should be banned from planes. I mean, surely stockings are a lethal weapon.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we have to ban anything heavy. You know, we should prevent tradesmen from carrying things like hammers, and we should stop people having saws and chisels and screwdrivers. And
I was actually forbidden from taking some Allen keys. I had a little set of Allen keys that, you know, they're totally blunt, but I was told that that was a dangerous weapon when I got on the plane recently. Now, actually, can I just be running out of time? We've got about a few minutes left here, Rochelle. I just want to focus a little bit on the media here, because it's always the media that is really setting the agenda, you know, calling the tune, telling us what to think. And what amazed me about the Sandy Hook shooting was, within about half an hour of that news coming out, the media here in Australia, half the world away, right, was saying there's going to be gun reform in America. And I don't even know how they could have known that. But they seem to have preempted it. The media has been saying all along, this is going to be a tipping point. They've used this tipping point over and over again. But the media has decided that. And this, again, on this show, we focus on what the media is doing and lying, and this information coming out of the media. But what is incredible, Rochelle, is the degree to which the media seems to be the mouthpiece of some kind of agenda. And this is where we have to really wonder how deep the conspiracy goes.
Well, you know, the media is owned by the people who want to take people's guns, and the reason why you won't find anything in the media about the role of psychotropic drugs, the role these things play in massacres and violent crimes, is because the drug companies advertise in the media, you see?
Right.
So they're not going to implicate psychotropic drugs. They're going to say, well, it's these terrible guns. We've got to take everyone's guns.
Right.
Look, I think anyone who has any doubts about these things should see a film on video. It's called Endgame: Blueprint for Global Enslavement. It's one of Alex Jones' films. And you can actually watch the whole film on YouTube. And it's extremely informative. It ties
yeah, great
it all
movie.
Together.
Great movie.
It's one of those films like 9/11, Loose Change. I showed that to people who said, oh, that's just rubbish, you know, fancy suggesting a government would kill people. And they watched it and they said, you're right, they did do something. You know, Harrowood, there are still people today who believe that Marinus van der Lubbe set the Reichstag on fire.
Right.
People have said, but statesmen like Hitler wouldn't have engaged in false flag operations.
Yeah.
Do they know what they're talking about? Do they know what he did to people?
It's too disturbing. The cognitive dissonance is too strong. And, I mean, it's ideal, isn't it? If you want to manipulate people, if you commit some absolutely heinous crime and then blame it on some other entity or group, you know, if you are running the show and you do that, it's a brilliant strategy. It's a brilliant strategy. And we've got to realize, but I think, you know, Rochelle, what we don't understand, what we don't give credit to is the degree of psychopathy, which is rampant in the ruling classes today. We don't realize the amount of psychopathy that has become standard in the way people function when they're in a high level managerial level. I mean, what's your assessment of that?
Oh, well, I think you're absolutely right. I was listening to Webster Tarpley, and, you know, the ruling elite are obsessed with eugenics. And what they are, you see, they're obsessed with their bloodlines, and they believe that other people are not as good as them. I know because my great-grandfather was a Scottish aristocrat and he detested his own social class. He became a class traitor of the best possible kind and joined the Labour Party. I mean, he was old Labour, not new Labour. But he said he didn't think it was fair and reasonable that the people at the top had everything and the people at the bottom had nothing. And he was a very decent man. He was an officer in the British Army during World War One, and he found a German boy behind the lines. The kid was about 16. He should have handed the kid over to be shot. But, I mean, he obviously didn't have these sort of inbred level of psychopathy because he cut a hole in the barbed wire and let the kid go. So
right.
the things that inbreeding produce are psychopathy and megalomania, and you are seeing psychopathy. What sort of people other than psychopaths would go into a school and shoot down children? I mean, the only other explanation is somebody on psychiatric drugs with akathisia, but, I mean, I'd think that there are too many flaws in the theory that Adam Lanza did it all by himself.
Well,
I mean, good company there because, you know, George Freund says, well, there are problems too, and he's a police officer.
Yeah, and I do encourage our listeners to follow through. Have you got any references that you could just maybe repeat so people can actually start checking out some of this information? Is there anything people can put into Google so they can actually check some of these points? Maybe give me a few strings that we could type in to search on in Google.
Yeah, well, the figure about death by government, democide, you can Google that.
What about specifically relating to the Sandy Hook shooting?
Oh, specifically relating to the Sandy Hook shooting. All right, just bear with me.
Sure.
I think you need to look at Sandy Hook shooting. Sandy Hook LM : three shooters, open brackets, capital letters, a close look, close brackets, and you'll find that on YouTube.
Sure.
The real culprit is psychotropic drugs. You can look at the Daily Herald. It's the real culprit. You can look at that. For the Peter Breggan statistics, you can look at Peter R. Breggan, MD, antidepressants and suicides, and suicide, pardon me, dash congressional testimony. You'll find that on YouTube. You can actually get the transcript of the congressional hearing. It's available on one of those little walks that's underneath. There's one, if not the first row, but on the second row underneath, if you run your cursor along, you'll find that when you touch it, it says download transcript.
Terrific. I might just pause you there. Just a quick question, Michelle. I've never asked you about this before. Are you a skeptic about the Port Arthur massacre of 1996?
Yes, I am. And of course, I did some research on that.
And I would love to get you back on the show if you've got research on that. We are just running out of time, unfortunately. I would love to get you on the show if you've got research to share on that. Rochelle, yep. It's been awesome having you today.
Thank you very much, Gerald. It's been great being on the show.
Yeah, great. And everyone, you know, if you've got anything to say, any comments, any criticisms of what Rochelle has been presenting, let me know. I unfortunately haven't had a chance to get into a lot of this information myself, but I do hope you've enjoyed it. We'll be right back after the break with another interview. Stay with us. Back here with Truth News Radio. It's great to be with you today. Well, I have in the studio here in Canberra for a brief interlude before we bring our next guest on in the second hour, I have my mother, Shirley Fenton. Of course, she's known to some of our listeners because we did an interview with Shirley a few years ago, which I actually rebroadcast on the Logos Network last month. And I thought I'd just get Shirl on and talk a little bit about some of the important topics that she thinks are important in the news, and I'd like to relate it to some of the background information that we've already discussed in relation to the history of militarism in the 20th century. My mother, of course, is a veteran of the Second World War, as was my father, Ed Fenton. My father was a pilot who actually flew bombers in the Second World War, and my mother was in the Navy in the Second World War. And both my parents played a very important role in the history of the 20th century. And I think it's sometimes interesting to reflect on that and to think about, you know, all the things that we fought for, everything that that generation struggled for, and think about what we've gained and what we've lost, because I actually feel that we're starting to lose a lot of what we gained. So on that note, Mrs. Fenton, I'd like to welcome you to the show, Mrs. Shirley Fenton.
Oh, thank you very much, Hero.
Maybe if you could just take your mic a little bit away from your mouth. It's a little bit too close. That's perfect.
Okay. Is that better?
That is perfect.
Good.
Welcome to Truth News Radio.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you on. Now, you fought against fascism in the Second World War. You fought against the Japanese. You were, of course, in the Navy here as part of the Pacific Theatre of War.
Yeah, correct? That's right. Well, I was actually in the Navy during World War II at HMAS Harmon, and we were the center of the whole Rolio connection with the whole South Pacific. Everything that we said from HMAS Harmon came out of HMAS Harmon and went all over the South Pacific. So in a sense, even though we were inland.
Maybe just pull the mic away a little bit from your mouth. You're a little too close. Yeah, thanks.
Even though we were inland for a long time, there we were. We were connection with the whole of the South Pacific. Was quite an incredible situation we worked in, yeah.
Indeed. And, you know, reflecting on everything that's happened in your life and looking at the state of the world now, I mean, how do you feel about the state we're in at the moment on this planet?
How do I feel about the state we're in? Well, I don't know. It seems as though the whole world has changed now from the way it was at the end of World War II. The people who were our enemies in those days now seem to be our friends, and the people who are our friends were posed then seem to now our enemies. It's very hard for us to understand all that, you know.
Well, that's a bit odd, isn't it? Yes,
it is very odd. It's very odd.
And what about the essence of what we were fighting against in World War II? The Nazis, of course, a terrible totalitarian regime, a terrible turning back of democracy, taking away people's rights, persecuting minority groups, engaging in rampant militarism and invasions of countries. But we look at today, we look at the behaviour of the United States and perhaps Israel, and we see the same sort of behaviour. It's incredible, isn't it? We see this same thing, and yet the lessons of history should have prevented that from reoccurring.
They should have indeed, yes, because those who were our enemies in those days, when I was during World War II, who were the Germans, and you know, it's quite really amazing, and they are no longer our enemies today. They are our saviours. They're looking after our monies, and they're managing the whole managing part of what's happening in our life today. It's quite amazing to us. And we don't know what the Japanese are up to. They seem to be moving from one way to the other. You know, who are they? And on top of all that, who are the Chinese? You know, during World War II, we didn't even know about the Chinese. They didn't even seem to exist. But they're very powerful today, and they're people we have to really take notice of.
So what's your feeling about the state of our democracy? I guess that's the thing that I'm most concerned about, and that's actually why I do this show, because I got the feeling, especially after 9/11, that we seem to be reverting democracy. We seem to be losing some of the givens that a free democratic society has, with the changes in laws and the anti-terrorism provisions and all the restrictions about when you get on a plane and all so many things. It's hard to even go through them all. I mean, what's your feeling about it?
I think that's absolutely true, what you're saying. Everything has really changed during the last 50 years to what it used to be before. And we have to try and organise things against how things are really happening for today. And it isn't everything the way it really was before. So we have to look at our governments and think, are you really doing the right things for us? Is that true, what our governments are doing? We're not really sure about that. We're really in a state of misapprehension about what our governments are doing for us. Do you think that too?
Can I just ask you what you think about the Australian government's position and the way the media indeed has been reporting on, for example, what happens at the moment in Syria and, of course, in the Middle East generally? Libya, of course, invaded, Muammar Gaddafi brutally killed, and now Syria on the brink of being invaded and possibly taken over, and of course threats to do the same to Iran. I mean, what's your feeling about all of that?
My feeling about all of that is very worrying, because I don't really understand about what is happening in Syria. One thing we hear from the press is one thing, and then we hear something else is from another. It's very hard for us to sort out one thing against the other. And I think that the same thing is happening as far as Iran is concerned. Iran seemed to be very quiet people. They're just not doing anything at all. They're very, very quiet about everything that's happening there. So we don't know anything about Iran. We just only know what the newspapers tell us. So we are in the hands of the newspapers who are telling us what's happening about in one place or the other. Unfortunately, that is our only way of knowing about things. And I think that's true in Iria as well as it is in other countries, as well as it is in Palestine and Israel too. We only know what the newspapers are telling us. Can we believe the newspapers? We only know what they tell us.
And
what
of course,
they tell us, absolutely right. Yes.
And that's why we – do you think we need alternative media? Do you think we need more people out there doing news reporting and telling you what they know? Do you think we can just rely on the television to give us the facts?
Well, how else can we know about it? We only know what they tell us. That is the big problem today. We only know what the journalists tell us about what is happening in Israel and what is happening in Syria and what is happening in other parts of the Middle East. It's a very... the whole of the Middle Eastern Petan area is just seemed like a great...
catastrophe.
Absolutely catastrophe, and we don't know what's really happening there. So we have to depend on journalists. Can we believe in journalists? Who knows? They're the only people we have to tell us what's happening.
Indeed. And we're just about out of time, but I just want to just briefly ask you, your husband, Ed Fenton, my father, of course, left America shortly after the Kennedy assassination, and you talked about that in our interview that we did a few years ago. And I just would like you to tell me, what do you think he would have thought about the way America turned out?
I think he would be utterly astonished, because the reason that we left America after the assassination of President Kennedy was because he said, we can no longer stay in this country. It's not a country which is giving us the truth. And he said to our friends, we are going to leave America and go and live in New Zealand, where he was happily to get a job. And everyone said, America? I mean, New Zealand, that's a commie country, isn't it?
Right.
You know, could you believe that Americans really would believe that New Zealand was a commie country? Well, we couldn't believe it either, and it certainly wasn't. Living there, it was a beautiful, fair and decent country. We had a marvellous time.
So do you think he would be disappointed further by what has happened in the United States, by the way, I guess this empire building has just continued decade after decade? I find it must be hard for people who actually served in the military, served to defend their country, to see their country taken over by these warmongers.
I'm sure he would be. And why he, as an American citizen, was happy to go and live in another country like New Zealand, because he felt that was happening in the United States. It was being taken over.
Shirley Fenton, I'm sorry, we are running out of time. It's been terrific talking to you today. Thank you so much for coming on Truth News. Stay with us. We'll be right back after the break for Hour 2. We're going to get into the 2012 Mayan conspiracy. Stay with us.